Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Lag, staggin', frazzleackin', mac, massin', vert, stackin', worsin', blaggin', workin', rushin', rush, lockin', brilliant, vert, vert, machine! Too many buttons and too few brains. Dadgum. Honest to Pete. Perfectly normal Friday show, normal weekend, happy, happy. One stupid little button gets pressed, and the Titanic hits the iceberg. So I guess the show will be like 6 minutes shorter tonight or something, or we'll catch it up at the front end of Peter's show, and then catch Peter's in up at the front end of the horn section, and catch the horn section up at the front end of John's show, and then everything will get normal about 6 minutes after 1 a.m. Tuesday, the 22nd of April. Oh, my God! It's going to be okay. I mean, you know, this is just frustrating. I know, you're not supposed to talk about it, but look, I mean, it is, you know. See, when this happens, you have to play button, button, which one's the damn button? And this happened to be just one button that I didn't see that apparently got depressed when something fell out of the rack. You know, maybe on my roll of emergency roll-aids landed on it and depressed it, and I couldn't hear anything in my headphones and everything. Oy! But it's all okay now. Everything's all right. I'm going to my happy place. Letting go now. Letting go now. Letting everything go. Yes. I'm in that happy place. You know, just like Flying Spaghetti Monster Paradise or something. No, Agnes might let me have the beer, but she wouldn't let me have the strippers. Oh, well. It'll be all right. I'll try not to blow another gasket for at least 10 or 15 minutes. That okay? Okay. But it could have happened to anybody. But Agnes had to come back here and go, "Honey, is it this button, you doofus?" "Yes, honey, it's that button. Thank you." You know, there's, as usual, after a long weekend, wow, just saw some news in the chat room, and let me just wish Paul the very best. He'll win this fight, and we will root him on. Damn straight. No, what I was going to say is that after a weekend, there's, you know, it's like having the toilet overflow. That's what weekends are like. When you're dealing with the news media, when you're dealing with politics, when you're dealing with right wingers, a weekend is like having your toilet overflow. And by Monday, you're just walking through the muck and the filth and the grime and the nasty. And so a show like this, you just wonder where in the heck you're going to start. Let's see. My inclination is to start with the guy that I like to call the problem. Now, remember, even if you're upset about elitist comments, or if you are a proponent of Fingergate, oh my God, I can't believe the stuff that's floating around my party right now. Just, the latest Clinton camp hissy. He's shooting birds at Hillary. He's giving the middle finger. He's dirty. Oh, Lord, grow up. You know, my principal, you know all about this. The Hilarians are having a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy and kittens with crocheted tails over the fact that Barack Obama scratched his nose with his middle finger, which is what your middle finger is for! And he did it on several occasions. Hilarians, that's called a habit? It's not a direct... Oh, but he turned his back on her! Oh, Jesus! Hilarians, could I direct your attention to the problem? The problem's name is not Barack Obama. The problem's name is John McCain. People might feel more inclined to, you know, feel good about Senator Clinton if she would stop sniping about, you know, which finger he uses to scratch, which finger Barack Obama uses to scratch his nose, and go after the problem. Here's the problem. You know, last week, Elizabeth Edwards pointed out that John McCain has had the best insurance the federal government can provide for all his life. Not all of his adult life. All his life. From the moment that the best part of him ran down his mama's leg, he has had the best health care the federal government could provide, and he doesn't believe that you deserve it, or that I deserve it, or that my kids deserve it, or grandkids, or little children yet unborn and undreamt of. No, he doesn't. So, Elizabeth Edwards, wife of John Edwards, who knows a little bit about dealing with the health care racket and the insurance company racket, called him out on it and said, for a fact, yes, he has had the best health care the federal government could provide all his life. And why doesn't he want the rest of America to have it? So, of course, he shows up on ABC's This Week with George Snuffleupagus and offers a rejoinder.
Let me move on to health care. That could be the biggest difference between you and the Democrats sure. This year. Democrats say your tax credit plan will not come close to covering everyone, and it especially won't help people with pre-existing health mm-hmm. conditions. Here was Elizabeth Edwards, wife of John mm-hmm. Edwards.
The truth is, our health care policy that covers everything but cancer doesn't exactly do me a lot of good. And so, as I said, John McCain and I have something in common. Neither one of us would be covered by his health care policy.
Now, she went on to say the both of you are going to be fine because you have plenty of resources to pay for health insurance. Mm-hmm. But for millions of Americans mm-hmm. with pre-existing conditions, they won't. Why mm-hmm. not guarantee that anyone with a pre-existing condition should be able to get health care?
Here it comes.
We would, as part of our plan, have a special Medicaid trust fund set up to help to care for those people who have pre-existing conditions. As you know, five chronic diseases consume 75% of the health care costs in America. We're not leaving anybody behind, but what we're not doing is we're not going to have a big government takeover and mandates. They've tried that in other countries. Both of the Senator.
Wait. He's right. They have tried it in other countries and succeeded beyond our wildest imagination. But let's find out where the problem is going with this.
Obama and Senator Clinton's plans are big government solutions. But that's true in everything
that they propose, and we will continue to have this debate.
What's wrong with it? Go to Canada. Well, go to England, and you can find out what's wrong with it.
Right! Nothing's wrong with it! They're not dropping like flies in Canada. They're not laying in the streets aching for medical care in the UK. Why, in both of those countries, unless I miss my guess, they don't have any uninsured, John, you damn dummy. Here, let me restate my thesis real quick. If this man, if this walking disaster of a human being, if this war criminal becomes the president of the United States, there will come a time, either in the next 4 years or the next 8 years, when we'll do the Nixon thing that we've been doing with Bush. You know, where we look back and go, well, you know, he was so crooked they had to screw him into the dirt when he died, but compared to Bush, Nixon looks pretty damn good. We'll do the same thing with you. Well, you know, compared to this joker who's at war with Iran and at war with the whole world and crashed the economy beyond all recognition and, you know, has destroyed the middle class utterly and completely and finally for the final time, George Bush looked pretty damn good. I know you find that hard to agree with. I find it difficult to say. But you know what? It's true. John McCain, the McCain-Churian candidate, John McCandidate, John McBush, John McSame is the problem. And it would appear that everybody on the Democratic side of the aisle in America can see that, with the exception of the people running the political camps of Senators Clinton and Obama. And lately, Senator Clinton, for the most part.
Oh, Jesus, that was elitist.
Yeah, because we all believe... just between you and me. Does anybody here believe that when she gets done with a busy, hard, tough, long day in the Senate, Senator Clinton kicks back with a shot of whiskey and a beer, an impenarn, as they call it up that away, an Iron City beer and a shot of Imperial whiskey? Because I don't. I just don't. Shoot. If I ended my days that way, I couldn't get my morning started. Not every day. Oh, I've got my bottle of in case of extreme emergency, please pull cork, last swallow of tequila in the bottom of the bottle here. You doubt me? Listen. Hear that? That's a cork. But I'm not honking on it. But anyway, never mind. See how easy you get sucked into it? See how easy it is? The problem. Let's go back to the problem.
Governments don't make the right decisions. Families make the right decisions.
One of the points in this...
Now, stop! This is an answer... Okay, we'll back up just a hair. This is an answer to George Snuffleupagus' question about what's wrong with the government having a hand in medical care. Let's do it again.
You can find out what's wrong with it.
One of the
governments don't make the right decisions. Families make the right decisions.
One of the points...
Families make the decisions. See, I'm playing the family card. It's about family values. Ooh, families.
Bite me, John McCain. Tell you what, buddy. Let's say your gallbladder's going rotten, and you just want to walk into an internal medicine specialist or a surgeon. Guess what, John McCain? I don't care if you've got solid gold insurance. I don't care if you're paying cash in gold bullion. The son of a bitch won't see you without a referral from another doctor. Families can't make health care decisions in America. You lying sack of crap, John McCain, you. Families make decisions. Insurance companies make decisions. Maybe you're talking about the families that run the insurance companies. God, I despise you, John McCain.
And Mrs. Edwards made in the Wall Street Journal, she said that your whole life you've had government health care. You're the son of a naval officer, now a member of Congress. And her point is, why shouldn't every American be able to get the kind of health care that members of Congress get or members of the military get?
It's a cheap shot, but I did have a period of time where I...
No, answer the question, you piece of crap. Answer the question. It's not a cheap shot. You've been on the federal teat since the day... Well, you know which day and what ran down where. Since that day, John McCain, you've been on the federal suck. Why can't America have some of what you had? But wait a minute. We know what you are. You're a lower than a snake's belly in a wagon rut, slithering, sliming, sleazing, repig-licking. So, what are you going to do, John? We know what you're going to do. We know where you're going to go.
I didn't have very good government health care. I had it from another government. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a real knee slapper, John. Reminder, I was a poor little POW. I deserve to be the president. But see, John, there are people out there who are telling the truth about your little stint in the Hanoi Hilton. About how every time he saw you, you were walking around and seemed quite healthy and happy. About how when he and his comrades were laying in their cages in solitary isolation, their entertainment was tapes that you made for the North Vietnamese, praising your captors, John. And that you got special treatment. See, John, you want everybody to think that you can't raise your stupid arms because of what the North Vietnamese did to you. But that's not true either, is it, John? You can't raise your arms because you were such a miserable, rotten, dumbass pilot that you crashed two or three planes before the one that got you in the Hanoi Hilton. You were such a low life tail end of the class schmuck that when you hit the eject button on your aircraft, when you were shot down, you were too damn dumb to remember to tuck your legs and your arms inside the ejection seat, and that is what screwed up your arms. You jerk. You supercilious jerk. You freak. You hateful SOB who won't answer George Snuffleupagus's little softball question. What's wrong with letting America have the same quality of health care that you've had, John McCain, from the very day that you were conceived? What the hell is wrong with it, John?
Look, I know what it's like in America not to have health care. We know that...
No, you don't, you lying SOB. You don't. You've had health care from the minute you were conceived. You do not know. You don't know what it's like to be turned down by an insurance company. You don't know what it's like to wait for testing until some bean-counting functionary in some corner cubicle of the third sub-basement of the great big insurance company of America who makes $32,000 a year passes on whether you live or goddamn well die, John McCain. You don't know it. Don't lie. Don't lie. Why do I say something like that? He's a repig-licking. Lying is what happens when he opens his mouth. He takes a breath in, the air comes out of his lungs, goes past the vocal cords, and a lie comes out of his mouth. John McCain is the problem. Anybody want to talk about Fingergate? Anybody want to talk about shots of whiskey or elitism?
John McCain is the problem.
That Americans are hurting there as well. We've got to make health care affordable and available. The difference, again, between myself and...
I don't know if I'm going to get through this soundbite. I honestly don't know. We got to make it affordable and available? Well, John, see, the problem is, in this economy, in this country, in 2008... You can't have them both together. Because if it's affordable to some, that means it's not available to most. And if it's available to some, that means it's not affordable to most. Sweet Jesus, it's going to be a long way to November. A long way to November. But you know what? At least we know who the problem is. At least we understand who the problem is. Here, let's finish up this little frenzy of lying that John's got going here.
And the Democrats, and in all respect, due respect, Mrs. Edwards, I want the families to make the choices. They want the government to make the choices.
That's the second time he's tried that. So they must have waterboarded him to get that into his little pea-sized brain, Mr. 894th out of a class of 899. You know, hell, George Bush at least didn't show up for Vietnam. John McCain showed up and became a war criminal.
I want the families to make the choices.
John, you dumbass. You big old honking doofus, you. Do you not understand that families can't make any choices right now? That under your plan, families won't make any choices except perhaps to live with the choice to eat and excrete and die, with maybe a little less eating once you're done with the economy. That's the only choice they've got. So what if they're hurting? So what if something's not right and they know it? So what if she gets up in the morning and she's taking a shower and she finds a lump in her breast? So what, John McCain? So what? She needs to get to work. Because that's her job. Carrying America on her back while you talk about families making the choices. Here's a choice. Try this one on for size, John McCain. How about when you're sick, you choose to go to the doctor, you show your government insurance card, the doctor sees you, the doctor diagnoses you, maybe the doctor sends you to a specialist. They give you medicine, you show your card at the pharmacy. They fill the prescription, you take the prescription, you take your medicine, you get better. How about those choices, John McCain? How about those choices? No, I don't think there's any room for those choices in Republican world, are there, John McCain?
That's a fundamental difference, and we will continue to debate that issue. But we can provide incentives. You mentioned that it's not enough, a $5,000 refundable tax credit for every family in America. It's a lot better than what they got today. And if we can let them go across state lines and get these inflationary aspects of health care under control, which we can do, then...
Please. You know, it's going to be nice when Agnes comes back here after school lets out. Because she'll be able to, like, throw ice cubes at me or flick little droplets of ice water in my face when I start turning all red and hopping up and down in the chair.
It's better than they got right now.
Well, you know what? rotten food is, I suppose, by some measurements, John, better than no food at all, but it doesn't make you any better. It can often make you worse.
Oh, $5,000 tax credit.
What do you do about the people who are unemployed and don't have any income, John? Oh, that's right. You're going to reform unemployment. We talked about that a little bit Friday night. You're going to make those no-good unemployed people work for it. By the way, Elizabeth Edwards responded to McCain's comment saying that her criticism was not a cheap shot.
That's a cheap shot.
No, it's not a cheap shot, John. You are a member of the American royal class. As American royalty, you have had cradle to, and it really can't happen soon enough to suit me, naturally, grave coverage. From the moment you are conceived until the moment you breathe out and don't breathe in again, John, the federal government is going to be there for you. And they will take heroic measures to keep your miserable life extending year after year after year after year while American workers drop dead who don't have any coverage at all. You bastard. Elitism? Somebody call the Clinton campaign. Let's talk a little bit about elitism. Here's elitism. You mentioned the fact that the guy's been on the federal suck all his life.
That's a cheap shot.
There's elitism for anybody who needs it defined for them. Mother McCree. Elizabeth Edwards went on to say that while it's not a cheap shot, what it is, just like what I just said, is a potentially life and death question for tens of millions of Americans, and it is a question that Senator McCain must address. Well, with all due respect, Mrs. Edwards, I do have to disagree. He doesn't have to address it. He's not going to address it. He's going to run away from it. He's going to play the I was a poor little POW card every blessed time it gets brought up. You want to talk about somebody that needs to be surrounded by people wearing purple band-aids? Not John Kerry. John McCain. What a chicken hawk, miserable, low-down, scum-sucking piece of nothing he is. But that's just where we begin. Yeah, I know, I'm being told I need to take it easy. No. It is not time to buy a Mac. The problem was not with the computer. The computer is running very nicely, by the way. The problem was with the mixing board. So, you know, ease up. Everything is not solved by a new Mac. Although, bless your hearts, those of you who enjoy them. Good on you. Yeah, this pointed out, who in this contest has even vaguely suggested that government run the medical system? Is McCrazy totally divorced from reality? Yeah, he is, Koss. Because God knows, the plan that's being put forward by Obama and the plan that's being put forward by Clinton are certainly nothing approaching universal health care. The moral and ethical thing for them to do while they're busy fighting out who's elitist and who's scratching their finger and what proof the liquor was and how often she drinks it would be for them to both agree that they, since there's not many primaries left, you know what, Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, Pennsylvania tomorrow, Indiana, North Carolina, Kentucky, West Virginia, Puerto Rico, not that much left. Let's ditch all the quibbling stuff and have these two candidates agree on one thing. The real answer to America's health care crisis is contained in John Conyers' H.R. 676, the Medicare for All Act. And then we will have a real debate as to whether or not every American deserves to be insured as a matter of right, as a matter of human rights, or whether one's ability to go to the doctor and be given the standard of care treatment should be determined by the bottom line in one's bank book. Because that is clear, and that is stark, and that is a legitimate question. Right? Yeah. So we'll take a run at the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, dear.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Let's see. An elitist. I would say that would be somebody with 8 homes.
Yeah.
Him and Cindy own 8 homes. Let's see.
But they're little bitty homes. They're cozy. They're cozy little cabins on the range, aren't they?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, they're mansions.
Yeah, I love that thing about the special fund for pre-existing conditions. Now, I happen to have pre-existing conditions that 99% of the doctors have never even heard of, let alone anybody else. You can bet I won't be on that list. I have been literally told, sorry, we can't do anything for you, go home, and if you die, you die. John McCain.
And how many times? I'm not to minimize anything, Susan. You've been told that, and how many millions of other Americans have been told that at one point or another?
Yeah.
How long are we going to tolerate the working class of this country being told that?
That's why I am politically active, and that's why I'm screaming bloody murder. I do not want that monstrosity in. And by the way, if people want some really good reading, look up the fire on the USS Forrestal.
Yeah, that he started, probably.
Yeah, because.
But he crashed a couple of other planes too, based on what I'm reading. I mean, this guy is a real loser.
Uh-huh.
There was a reason. You know, the McCain people. Well, you know, it was 894th out of 899 in his class because he was a maverick and he was a stand-up guy and he stood up for the people who were being bullied and that caused him to not do well with the administration. La 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 la. No, he did it because he got D's in calc and stuff like that.
Yeah. He has been a affirmative action welfare recipient from the day he was conceived.
Yes.
Only he gets the rich people's welfare.
Right. Hey, I got an idea here. This just dawned on me. You know how he released his tax returns, but he didn't release Cindy's?
Yeah.
Because he didn't want people seeing what a gigolo he is. Never mind. He's never going to release that other. What do you say we start demanding that he release his Annapolis transcript?
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean, they want to say, well, you know, it's because he was standing up for people who were being bullied. Okay, well, fine. You know, then he'll have really good grades, but, you know, he was unfairly demoted or something. No. And then you know what we can do? We can lay his Annapolis transcript side by side with George's transcript from Yale, and we can say, hey, we've had one idiot in the Oval Office for 8 years. How'd that work out for us?
Yeah. Not to mention we could put him up against either Hillary or Barack and say, guys, do you want somebody with a functioning brain? Or do you want another idiot like George?
He may be dumber than George. I know. See, that's the scary thing. I know that's hard to conceive, hard to fathom, hard to imagine. John McCain may actually be dumber than George Bush.
Well, what McCain does not have is Dick Cheney.
Not yet.
Yeah, it wasn't. I understand that. But That's been what's been running the White House for 8 years is Dick Cheney. It's not been George. They just trot George out when he...
Yeah, when it's time for him to tell somebody they gave an awesome speech.
Yeah.
Lordy.
Or when they need him to, you know, strut around like a bantam cock showing his package. It's...
Oh! Now, darn it. I'm eating light these days because I don't want to upset my gallbladder, but doggone it, that's going to make everything come up, that dental image. Doggone it. What'd you want to do that to me for?
Oh, I'm sorry, sweetie. Yeah, and speaking of gallbladders, I got a husband who's got the same exact problem. He's supposed to be able to go to the VA because he's a veteran, right? Guess what? We can't afford to go to the VA.
Now, wait a minute. What does that mean?
We can't afford the copay.
You can't go and say, bill me?
Sure we can.
And then send them $1.99 a month, or, you know.
They charge interest.
Son of a gun. Son of a gun.
Yeah,
a World War II and Korea veteran can't go to the VA because of the copay. You know what? There are moments, Susan, when I just want to say, you know what? We're done. We're just done. There's nothing here to fix. Humpty Dumpty's off the wall, and there's nothing here to fix.
There are times when I just want to throw my hands up and say, somebody, a country, any country, tell me where I can come, please. But unfortunately, that avenue is closed to me also. So, it's go down swinging.
Yeah, I just heard from another one of your compadres up there in the PNW saying, stand up, Maverick, he's a drunk.
Yeah. He said, oh, God, he is just the damnedest.
But, oh, okay, now, wait. Let's back up. Let's back up before we go into the fun vocabulary.
Okay.
We knew we were going to have one of these horses' asses. I mean, Giuliani, Romney. Can you imagine Willard Romney? Would they have had a better idea? Would Tom Tancredo or Sam Brokeback, I mean Brownback, have had a better idea? Would radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee have had a better idea?
Well, I'm still of the opinion we're going to get stuck with Huckabee. Because he came right out, McCrazy came right out and said that he will not consider anybody who is pro-choice as vice president. So to me, that means we get Huckabee.
No, that could also mean that Condi Rice has to suddenly have a post-menopausal road to Damascus moment and realize that now that everything's safe for her, she can say the hell with the rest of the women.
Oh, God, you had to put that image in my head, didn't you?
Oja, you had it coming.
I mean, that's just disgusting.
But see, remember, since we're talking about the former Republican contenders, Rudy Giuliani was, you know, when his wife threw him out of Gracie Mansion in New York, he went and lived with a couple of gay pals.
Uh-huh.
And he hit the primary hustings talking about how family values he was.
Oh yeah, I was actually hoping Giuliani would get the nomination because he would have been so easy to beat.
John McCain should be easy to beat. That's what the whole point of all this is. He is so stark dead wrong. You know, I bless his heart. I know by virtue of running the rerun stream here, I know that Guy James, who is a much more sane and sort of sober sides guy than I am, I know that he's saying, you know, everybody take a breath. It's going to be okay. Just relax. It'll be all right. And he said it, I think, in one of the shows this past week, John McCain is the Republican Party's 21st century answer to Bob Dole.
Oh, God.
And maybe it is. Maybe it is. I hope so.
The problem.
I just want to stay focused on the problem. You just used the word. I just want to stay focused on the problem.
Yeah. The deal with getting to McCain is you've got to get past the media because the media thinks she's God's great gift.
You know, I wonder if the crap storm that George Snuffleupagus got caught in had any impact on his actually asking a couple of real questions of John McSame this past Sunday. Because, you know, you did hear him. He said, hey, what's wrong with the government being in health care?
Yeah, what's wrong with it? Nothing.
So maybe some of the stuff that he caught over that stupid charade that passed for the pageant in Pennsylvania, maybe he got the memo.
Could be.
I'm not holding my breath though. He'll be back. But you know what? On that show, just because I am the way I am, you watch the clips of that show. Neither McCain nor Snuffleupagus are wearing their flag pin.
Oh, goodness.
So it would be nice if we could have a little, if Barack doesn't have to wear one, we don't neither.
Who gives a rip? And the term for McCain, there's two terms that can be used for McCain. One of them is Stephanie Miller. She calls him Grampy McCrazy. I love the term Grampy. It just denigrates him so nicely. And the other one is he's a up.
Yeah.
Didn't say the word.
Screw up. He's a screw up.
Well, that was.
He could screw up a one-car funeral, John McCain.
Yeah, he will. He would. I mean, the man is he's a disaster waiting to happen. I don't want this man anywhere near a nuclear trigger with his temper. Jeez.
I know, and I've got something that sort of plays into that for later in the evening if I remember to get to it. Yeah. Susan, good talking to you. Say hey to Donald for us.
Yeah, I'd love to, Agnes.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Yeah, I really do. The nuclear football. Mad Dog McCain's going to be near the nuclear football. There is a sort of counterpoint to that. Our pal Cindy says, nothing to fix. That's the subject line of the email. That's why I began to write today. I forgot my point as I began to listen. My point is, just what does this government do for the people? They tax us. They take our young and kill them in their wars. Please tell me, what do they do for us? Why do we even need this government? It used to be you could say, well, you know, our federal tax dollars go to build a really good highway system. Not anymore. The highways are crumbling. Bridges are falling. Bridges fall out from under the motorists. Well, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers... No, because the Army Corps of Engineers is nothing more than a pimp for the mountaintop removal industry, rubber stamping any stinking little application to destroy a few thousand acres of the oldest mountains in the world and bury the streams that are literally the capillaries of the water system, watershed of the eastern United States. No. Well, how about the levee? No, they weren't so good with the levees either, were they? Well, they managed we got Social Security. Only for so long as we can protect it. We've been fighting to save Social Security now for how many years? And not save it from financial instability, but to save it from rapacious Republicans who want to put it on the New York Stock Exchange lotto game. You know, your elderly years, your retirement as a function of some sort of scratch-off game. Find a chicken hawk and win double that amount. This is a broken government. the question is whether or not, and I go back and forth, I freely admit, I go back and forth, whether there's anything left to fix. Did you catch that comment from McCain, Cindy asks? He said, we're going to get those inflationary elements under control by allowing them to go over state lines. And this is pretty perceptive. Listen carefully. In other words, he's going to pit states against one another for your medical business. She says, by the way, that's already open in America. I live on the state border between Washington and Oregon. And people go over and back and forth for medical and everything else all the time, jobs included. So that comment is nothing but fill. Made noise, meant nothing. Well, that's right up there with cited sub sank same, isn't it? Made noise, meant nothing. We need single-payer nationalized medicine, and if the economy collapses, we will get it by default because as a third-world nation, we will qualify for charity. I hate McCain. He's a piece of work. How true, how true, how true. And of course, it really is. It's the difference between for profit and for the people. And as for me, having watched the debacles of Wall Street for most of my adult life, I can't help thinking that, yeah, I like the idea of doing medical coverage and health care for the people, not for the profit. Now, I know that if you were to say that anywhere that Timmy and Chris the Screamer and Snuffleupagus and the rest of the elitist crowd were around, they'd probably call me a communist or a socialist. But you know what? I've been called a whole lot worse. But then again, there's the impact that those freaks have on the American people, and it's pretty damn sad. But then again, when you make $5 or $10 million a year, you really don't make health care choices, do you? You just pay the damn bill. There's no choice involved. It's what my father used to refer to as the hell write a check syndrome. It was a running gag we had in the family. We'd see a nice car sitting at a car lot, and I'd say, Dad, that looks like a good one. He'd say, hell, write a check. My mother, bless her heart, before she left us in 1997, my mother, who wouldn't say poopy if she had a mouthful, she would even get in the business once in a while. Sure would be nice to have a new fridge, wouldn't it, Mom? Hell, write a check. See, they'd been through the Depression as children and the Second World War as young adults, like so many of your parents, so many of your grandparents. And they had a kind of a gallows humor about what it was to be middle class in America and what a profound ongoing day in, day out, no let up struggle it was. Not because it was hard to go to work. Not because it was hard to fix a meal or maintain a home or keep the car going. Because it was hard work to be middle class when the Republican Party was constantly at war with you, trying to make it harder and harder and harder. And hence that that gallows humor. So we're at the top of the hour. We'll take a little break. Then we'll come back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
Your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
So, just a point of inquiry. Do you suppose, you know, when we're talking about the Bushes and the McCains and the McSames and the, all those hateful, hateful, vile, filthy people, they don't really believe that crap they talk, do they? That garbage. Spewing that filth about, it's about family choices. They're not that divorced from reality, are they? This is just plain old-fashioned shilling for the insurance company, right? I mean, that's the only way to explain it. It couldn't possibly be anything else. They're just that loathsome. They know what they're doing to us. They giggle about it. They know what they... It's not that they don't know what's happening in America. They don't know. It's not that they don't know what's happening to working people. It's that they don't care. And that's the big difference. They don't care. And if they do bother to care, frankly, when you get them alone and all liquored up or drugged or whatever it is they do to each other, they'll tell you they hope it gets worse. Because again, calling to mind my dad, all my life he said Republicans want a two-class society. A very small number of very rich and a very large number of very poor. And they are, to use a sport analogy, they're in the red zone on that one. They've got fourth and goal from the one right now on busting the middle class once and for all. And all we've got is our little working class goal line defense. And that defense can win for us if we pull together, if we stand as one and reject John McCain. But don't think for a minute that it's any kind of a lead pipe cinch. Why do I say that? Well, my life is defined by my little comings and goings and happenings. And so a couple of nights ago, I ran out to the grocery store. I had polled the family, and the majority vote was for old dad to make the family sketty sauce. So off to the grocery store I went, you know, little hamburger, a very little hamburger, some tomato sauce, a couple of green peppers, a couple of nice onions, some mushrooms. I keep some really skank red wine handy, you know, buy a jug of it a year. And all the herbs and spices, and let it, you know, do what it does for a while and simmer and stuff. And you get. So, I'm going through the checkout line. And the person behind me in line, because, you know, this is my strategery. Not hand billing for a candidate, but just talking about life. And then quietly slipping the knife into a Republican. And, you know, reminding people that Republicans are why we are, where we are. These things aren't, you know, this is not a boating accident and we're going to need a bigger boat. And so I got to my punchline talking with my co-shopper there, my fellow consumer. And I said, and I tell you what, brother, we got a lot of problems and we think it's bad now, but we have not begun to comprehend or even dream of the problems we're going to have if John McCain wins this election. Because if John McCain wins, you can stick a fork in us, because we're done as a nation. And the girl who was doing the checkout, and by girl I mean she was young, voting age, but young, the young woman who was doing the checkout, looks up and says, well, I'll vote for John McCain. I sure don't want some towel head for my president. Mm-hmm. Really. Really. I don't want some towel head for my president. And then she turns on me and she says, did you know his mama was an atheist? I looked at her and said, so were Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and Ben Franklin, but that worked out okay, didn't it? Well, our country was founded on our religion. No, and I said, no. Because I was about to come unglued. I said, no, save that for Sunday school where they believe it, but I know American history. And this country was not founded on any religious values. And if you know anybody that wants to spout that to my face, tell them to give me a call. Or look me up. Everybody knows where I live. And I will cite chapter and verse and refute every single lie that has come out of these churches up these hollers until there's no strength left in me to do it. Towel head? Well, he ain't even an American. I said, he was born in Hawaii when Hawaii was a state. Would you care to guess where John McCain was born? You want to talk about not an American? John McCain wasn't even born in this country. He was born on a military base in the Canal Zone. This is not going to be... But look, I would love for this to be easy. I would love for this to be shooting fish in a barrel like beating Bob Dole was in 1996. Everybody understood from the moment that he was anointed, or whatever it is Republicans do to each other at their convention. I don't want to know about it. I'm a family values kind of guy. But everybody knew that Bob Dole was a cipher. He was a placeholder. He was a zero to the right of a decimal point. And so there was no, you know, the Republicans knew it, the Democrats knew it, the Independents knew it, everybody knew it. But starting in 2000, what everybody knew, suddenly, I don't know, it's like the earth moved. Or there was some sort of seismic shift. Because everybody knew that George W. Bush was, beyond a shadow of a doubt, too big an idiot to ever fool the American people into electing him. And you know what? We were right, weren't we? We damn sure were. A pretty large majority of a couple of million people sided with Al Gore over George W. Bush. and the Supreme Court of the United States stopped the counting of the ballots in Florida. But this is all history to you, and it doesn't matter much. But you see, what I'm getting at is that young woman who was checking my groceries out, she didn't have a vote in 2004 because she would have been too young, and she was too young to vote in 2000. So she doesn't remember what it was for America to get ripped off. She was, in fact, a 12-year-old in 2000. When the planes flew into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and into the ground in western Pennsylvania, she was a 13-year-old. And she was, as that strange little verb, she was churched. And from the time she was little, they've been poisoning her mind in the church. Sure don't want no towel head for my president. Dig it. Go way deep on that one. Go all the way down and realize what it means for a 20 or 21-year-old to not be able to tell the difference between someone who is African and someone who is Middle Eastern. In her world, anything that isn't lily white and speaking some form of English is a towel head. All she knows is that Barack Obama wants to take his oath on the Koran, and that his mama was an atheist. It would be nice if she could live around a few atheists and understand that when the rubber meets the road, that's who you want on your side, not somebody who will fight instead of pray. Young woman's willing to vote for someone who will, with every action he takes in the Oval Office, work directly against her, but she's willing to vote for him because he ain't no towel head. And before you decide that maybe that's just because West Virginia has those kind of people in it, let me explain. West Virginia has those kind of people in it. Kentucky has those kind of people in it. Virginia has those kind of people in it. North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri, Tennessee are all chock-a-block with those kind of people. And here's the part that as Democrats and liberals and progressives we don't necessarily want to acknowledge, but there's a bunch of those people in California and Washington and Oregon and Michigan and Illinois and Indiana and Iowa and Minnesota and Wisconsin and New York and Massachusetts and Connecticut and Jersey. Because we're not talking about regional stereotypes. We are talking about functions of abject ignorance. And those people are going to have to be talked to and cajoled. Yes, argued with. Worked on from now till November. Because these people will vote against their own wallets. They'll vote against their own families. They'll vote against their own futures. They'll vote against their mamas and their daddies. and their grannies and their granddads. They'll vote against everything with their families doing the same thing. Because they are driven not by any sort of understanding of politics or geopolitics or society or culture. They are driven by one thing, bigotry. And for the Hilarians, if you think that she's going to get a pass on McCain or her, hell no. Because, well, my little private gathering of empirical data. So what about Hillary? Oh, I hate her. Not even so much as a towel head comment. I hate her. She's disgusting. Which means that the 16-year-long industry that the Repiglicans have built, that tree that they planted has sunk deep roots and has grown tall with spreading limbs. See, with Barack Obama, you have to cite your bigotry as the reason. But with Hillary Clinton, that's just how you were born. I just hate her. This young woman's been in a household that has probably never said a decent thing about Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton since she was born. She was born the year that Bill Clinton made that god-awful 3-hour speech where people applauded when he finally said, and in conclusion, in Atlanta in 1988. And she has been raised around people who hate Clintons from that day to this. So no, it's not any better if it's Hillary. So whoever thinks that this is going to be some sort of a cakewalk, at best think again. Because it's not. It's just not. There are too many bigots, too many racists, too many misogynists, too many morons for any presidential election to ever be easy again. We're going to have to fight for every last one of them. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, Bob. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, Sarge. What's up, brother?
Oh, doing good. I heard you talking about one of my favorite whipping posts, Mr. Bloody John McCain.
Yeah, and, Bomber John.
I just cannot say enough about him. He's, like I've said before, and I'll say it again. I've said it on my show. I've said it to you before, and Malloy and everybody. John McCain is the biggest traitor we've ever had in American history. If you stop and you look at his support of the Military Commissions Act, which is probably the biggest piece of garbage that's ever come down the pike, and here's a man who has suffered through torture himself, and yet he hasn't got the audacity but to support this after he, and by doing so, he spits on the memory of every veteran, every soldier in the past, future, and present. And how anybody can support this racist piece of garbage named John McCain is beyond me. Even Joe Arpaio, even this slug.
Yeah, he's a miserable, like, yeah.
And Arpaio doesn't even like him. Then you take someone like Thad Cochran, who is also a piece of garbage, and he says, this man isn't fit to be president. Here's a man who has started fights on the Senate floor, from what I've heard. You know, he's actually taken on people that disagreed with him.
Yeah.
I mean, why? I mean, I'm not a Hillary supporter at all, but I'm going to tell you what. Hillary is 50 times the man, or the person, if you want to say it, which is more appropriately, than John McCain ever thought of being.
Look, Hillary Clinton, first in her class at Yale Law School. You don't just get that on the back of a matchbook, okay? John McCain, 894th out of 899, and a legacy admission to the United States Naval Academy.
Yeah, and you look at what he's done here in Arizona, and the media here does not like him. He does not get favorable press out here in Arizona, and I know because I've been out here for a year now, and there's many people here who don't like him, and the only reason he's getting votes is because he has a lot of these stuck-up racist pigs. He didn't vote for the Martin Luther King Amendment, and he didn't even apologize for that until he decided to run for president. Then he needed the black vote, so all of a sudden he decided he'd apologize. That's the kind of man John McCain is. He's a coward. He's a lowlife. And how anyone thinks that this man is qualified to be president of the United States had better do the homework, Bob.
Well, okay, Sarge, let's start with the last thing you just said, had better do their homework. That is the last thing that they're going to do between you and me. And you know it as well as I do. They're not going to do their homework. They're going to wait for some guy in a polyester suit to tell them who to vote for from the pulpit of their little fundamentalist church.
Yeah, and what, Bob, look, now I call McCain's office and I asked them, his Senate office, and asked them, okay, what about Katrina? And I gave them the name of my show. I said, all you got to do is go back and read and listen to these shows. And you know what the excuse they gave for not helping Katrina victims? It calls for earmarks, and we don't want to introduce any earmarks.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I got an interesting little earmark story in the stack tonight, too.
Well, that's what you get with John McCain.
And see, but John McCain's against earmarks unless they're the earmarks that John McCain wants. For instance, our aid to Israel and Egypt and places like that are earmarks.
Right, exactly.
And he is darn sure not going to come out and say that he wants to cut off aid to Israel.
And even the via Iraq money is earmarks.
Sure it is. Iraq isn't even on the budget, Sarge.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, McCain owns eight different houses. Now, and here's a guy who is willing to sacrifice the middle class because he has plenty, and yet we've got all these homeless, we have people who just can't afford to live, and working people. And this is the kind of people that John McCain's after. Doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. You know, I heard Guy James say something that was so, I just love Guy. He was back during the little minor flap that really didn't catch fire over Cindy McCain plagiarizing Food Network recipes. Remember that? Bless his heart.
Arizona newspaper.
Yeah. Guy said, listen, here's a classic Cindy McCain recipe. Yawn. Say, I feel like surfing turf tonight. I want lobster tails and filet mignon. Turn to the left, facing Consuela, and say, Consuela, I want filet mignon and lobster tonight. Quickly. Andale.
Well, do you think Cindy McCain's cooked a meal ever in her life? It's been a number of years.
I'm guessing she'd probably hurt herself boiling water.
I'm kind of opinion that. But, Bob, listen, I want to thank you for everything you and the Horn does. And, folks, like we were saying, do your homework.
Yeah. Do your homework. It gets kind of easy, doesn't it?
That's right. And, hey, it's not hard to do. It just takes a few minutes.
Exactly.
Bob, thank you so much, and I'm going to let you go.
All right. You take care, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. You can hear Sarge every Sunday morning, depending on time, what time zone you're in, on KPHX out of Phoenix. You can catch him on the Nova M stream. Cindy asks another question about my grocery checkout experience. Where did this child get the idea she knows everything? Did nobody ever smack her down? Come on, Bob. America was founded by people trying to get away from churches and kings. Try telling that to a fundy, Cindy. Try telling that to a fundy. because they don't believe that. And what they believe is what matters. They don't have to know anything. That's what it is about fundies. They don't have to know anything. All they have to do is believe and have a personal relationship with their belief. Really, I'm not kidding. I know I do the voice and I'm, you know, kind of a smartass about it. But that's only because I had it, you know, drilled into my brain for about the first 15 years of my life. And it's hard to get over that stuff. You try and you work at it. That's why I'm a recovering Southern Baptist and not a recovered Southern Baptist. Got to keep working the steps. America was founded by people trying to get away from churches and kings. You know what? This little region where I live, this little area, long before there was ever a town incorporated down the hill, some people came onto this plateau long about 1793. What was the first thing they built? A house? Mm-mm. Lean-tos and shelters and wiki-ups. Did they build a place where they could have government? Nope. Did they build a fort against the still considerably pissed-off bands of Indians who lived around here? Nope. Maybe they built a church. They built a church. And those same people are the ancestors of the people now who look at you and say, well, I don't want no towel head for my president. That's how they do it. Now, understand, I don't want to just bail out on the South, because there are way too many good people there, and those good people can band together and outnumber the idiots if they choose to do so. And it'll be a great day when we bring the South back into the fold. Because like Abraham Lincoln, I tend to believe, there's that word, sorry, that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And our house is as divided or more so than it has been since, yea, verily, even the war between the states. Sorely divided. Bitterly divided. But I wonder if it's enough. I wonder if it's enough. Because it takes a whole heap of misery to get fundamentalist people off of their damn praying knees and onto their walking, working feet. It takes a lot of people eating the pie in the sky when they die before the ones who are left behind, and there's your real left behind, start getting sick of living on hay day by day. Sarge mentioned earmarks. This may just turn out to be a sort of a John McCain kind of night. Sarge mentioned earmarks. And what an earmark story this is. The McCain-Turian candidate, you know, has been on a so-called crusade against earmarks. Now, bear in mind, he still won't, even if he gets to be president, he won't have a line item veto. Supreme Court took that away when they thought Bill Clinton was going to use it. He won't have a line item veto, so he can't line item veto the the earmarks out. The only way he could eliminate earmarks is if he told the Congress that he would veto every bill that had an earmark in it. Every budget that had an earmark in it, he would veto. Congress, especially one hopes, a Democratic Congress, would then most likely send him a budget that had a whole bunch of earmarks for Israel in it, as well as the earmarks that they wanted. And that would be the end of his straight talk on earmarks. Now, you heard earlier the elitist piece of garbage that he spewed about families making medical decisions. You know, John, you miserable piece of work, you. I've been part of a family that made the hardest medical decision that any family will ever have to make. My mother laid in surgical and then medical intensive care at the University of Alabama, Birmingham for 7 months after a profound piece of medical malpractice was done to her. And then, in that seventh month, with my father literally living in Birmingham and having decamped his own home in Florence, living in a hotel, bankrupting himself, so that the three times a day when the doors opened to allow family in to visit with their loved ones in intensive care, 20 minutes at a time, he could be there to tell her that he loved her, and he could hold her hand. And for a time there, she was able to hold a pen, even though she couldn't speak because they'd done a tracheotomy on her. She could hold a pencil and write notes to him about what they would do when she got well. And after 7 months, a couple of bouts of pneumonia because she was on a ventilator, after 7 months, and they burned her kidneys up with the antibiotics to fight off the pneumonia, after 7 months, when they had billed the entirety of her $1 million worth of Medicare coverage down to zero, they called my father, my sister, and me, into a room, and the doctor explained to us that it was time to remove my mother from life support because it was time for my father, my sister, and me to stop playing God. So, John McCain, I don't personally want to hear any more about families making medical decisions, you bastard, you. Because we've had to make them. I've had to make them. And the only thing at the end of the day that was of any concern to anybody who was not a member of my family was the goddamn money. And you have never faced that agony, John McCain. You have never faced that hell. You have never held a 72-year-old man in your arms as his body racked with sobs for what had been done the only reason he had on earth for remaining alive. You go to hell, John McCain. You go there soon, I hope. And I hope they find the hottest place they've got there for you. So we heard that little bit of BS from John McCain. In a minute, I've got another line of crap from him to share with you. This with the added bonus of the dirtiest, stinkinest racism. But right now we're going to go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
That's very touching. I can surely relate to you, as you well know.
Well, I don't like these well-heeled SOBs telling me about what my life is about. That's all.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they don't care. And his wife was on the Dew today. She was there for the whole show like a co-host.
Oh, wow. Did Elizabeth Hasselbeck just, like, crawl all over and, like, lick her toes or something?
She asked her about the recipes, and she told her that it was an intern, and the intern was now going to cooking school.
Oh, ain't that funny.
Uh-huh. But she's very much a Stepford, you know, person.
Did they happen to ask her if she knew any recipes right out, just offhand?
I didn't pursue it enough, you know. It was like she didn't know or something. I don't know. It was kind of dumbish.
Really? And it involved Cindy McCain? No kidding.
And you know what? Barbara did ask her about if she had heard that she didn't want him to run. You know, to go through all of that. And she said, well, no, not really. She said, we're making history. That's exciting. That's, you know, you're making history. That's your reason. But she had a different hairdo, and they asked her about that. She had her hairdresser with her for that. And they asked her why she had it kind of down, you know, and made her look a little better. And she said, well, they said, why don't you wear it that way when you're on the road? And she said, well, it's according to how it is, you know, whatever. Things like that basically was all she talked about. But you know what? You remember when John Kerry was running and they were showing all these homes that he owned?
Mm-hmm.
What about all the homes they have?
Oh, sorry. See, if John McCain was a Democrat, they'd be showing. They'd be showing homes that he didn't own.
Right. And I mean, they would have already been showing it. They wouldn't have been waiting for the runoff.
I know.
But anyway, I may have some good news for us down here. I don't know. We do have a contender for the Congress against Mr. Putnam.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he's the retired Navy man. His wife is a retired military. I believe she was in the Army. I just found out about it this weekend, but I was looking at his website, and he doesn't look that old. You know what I mean? He looks like a... he's got that face like, kind of like, what's the one that ran for president, the general?
Wes Clark?
Clark. He kind of has that kind of nice looking face of it. You know, and as far as looks go, a lot of people go by that. And, he's ready to have some issues out there. He says they've voiced not an echo. because of Putnam, the only thing he runs on is family values.
Really? He doesn't even run on terror?
No, just family values.
He must be keeping terror back.
Well, he's got a all-American family. You know, he's got a bunch of little kids, and he comes, you know, he's a well-to-do. He's like Catherine Harris. He comes from that citrus millionaire background. And he goes to the, well, I think one of the Baptist churches. And he's got his little wife, you know, and everything that Bush does is fine.
Yeah, and I bet if you put a private detective on him, you could catch him in the Spank Me, I've Been Naughty strip club or something
but he
similar.
Actually, the first time he ran, he actually did it. All he had was family values. And we had a pretty good guy running against him, but he was kind of older. But he was
well, get behind your guy and get a,
But I hope this guy, his name is Doug Tudor, T-U-D-O-R.
That's a good old English name for sure.
Yeah, and he's already got his website up.
Lives next door to Bill Fordor. Two-door and four-door, get it? Uh-huh. I'm sorry, I was just looking at the chat room. I'm supposed to be funny. So there's their funny. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off.
But anyway, yeah, I know what Suzanne was talking about. The that gets you on every level of medical care is the co-pays.
Sure.
It really does. And boy, these places are relentless if you don't pay it.
Oh, yeah, they are. They charge interest, turn you over to the credit collection agencies. I'm still dealing with I'm still getting bills for my dad.
Oh my goodness. Bless your heart.
And I don't know how many I've written saying, you know, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that still get bills. We'll have to turn you over to a collection agency. And I want to look at him and say, well, you know, you'll have to turn over a spade of dirt to find him, you know, but if you're willing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rapacious SOBs is what they are, Juanita. Sorry, but they are.
But they, one other thing about Cindy, she was talking about, she said she didn't know why people thought he was had a bad temper. She said he's very fervent in what he believes, and he really fights for what he believes in. And she said that some people might take that for a temper.
Or maybe hearing him call her the C word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyhow. Oh, let's see. She said something about her children, you know, we're going to be at somebody's gonna reporters press club. What is the press club?
Oh, the National Press Club?
Yeah, and somebody is gonna be on there, and she said, well, I hope you'll be careful because my I guess it was a guest, I forget now, but anyway, she said, I hope you'll be careful because my children will be there. So I don't know.
Well, you know that her children was the reason that they decided not to release her tax returns, right?
No, I didn't know that.
She said, you know, it was protecting the privacy of her children. You know, her children are 17, 20, and 22, something like that.
That's another thing they did to John McCain, you know, about his wife. But he supposed to have made $400,000 and gave over $100,000 in charity. And I understand that's part of that's what she gave. You know, if he gave $100,000 out of $400,000, that's way more than a tithe, 10% or whatever. But I don't know. It's just disgusting.
It is.
It really is.
And they're getting lectured by these people.
Yeah.
And being told, you know, that's what crawled all over me, Juanita, that families make decisions.
The family, yeah. Yeah. And he made some kind of joke about having Alzheimer's. And, you know, that is not a funny disease. I used to work with people.
Mercy sakes, no.
That's one of the most tragic things you can be around. You know, to see them going down, down, down. And it is not a that is not a funny disease at all. I can't remember what he said, but he made some kind of joke out of it.
Everything's a...
Yeah, him. Well, he's got that in
this
common
is the,
with
this
Bush.
Is the, this is the party that doesn't understand when ordinary Americans like us, Juanita, get all bent out of shape.
Yeah.
When the president crawls around under the coffee table on a video looking for the missing weapons of mass destruction. These moments of manifest insensitivity are not a function of individual ethos. They are a function of the way it is inside the rotten, filthy mind of a pig licking.
Yeah. It reminds me of some people I used to work for. They had these twisted minds. Everything was cutesy and funny to them, you know.
We could sit here and we could tick off things that the Alzheimer's comment, looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
How about another one? Oh, the Children's Health Insurance Program, the CHIPS, the expanded CHIPS program. You know, we can't expand that because we don't want the government to get in the business of taking care of children.
Oh, that would be terrible. We got to take
But it's inside their minds. See,
yeah.
they say this stuff and they mean it in all earnest because they think we think that way too.
Yeah. And I think they think they're fooling a lot of people, which I guess they are. And I was going to say about that girl, you know, about she doesn't need to come down to this section of Florida if she wants to go to a doctor because we got a lot of them here. Yeah.
Right.
We got a lot, and they're great. Most of them are great.
Sure they are.
As any average doctor, you know, there's always a bad crop in each bunch, and some of them are very much from the United States and supposed to be Christians, too. No, I'd rather go to a good...
See, I think she was a little bit taken aback when I took umbrage at her remark. And that's what I'm trying to get across is the idea that for me, who says, oh, my God, you know, you're not serious, how many other people has she said, I don't want no towel head for my president?
And
they
right.
said, ha, 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 oh, yeah, I know what you mean, daggum, sure thing, uh-huh. Yeah, he wants to get swore on the co-ran, yeah.
I used to get emails from somebody that called them that, and who's no longer with us. You call them towel heads or whatever.
Yep.
And anyway, oh well.
I know.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. What are you today?
I'm not magnificent.
Outstanding? Did I say that yet?
Yeah, I've been outstanding. I've been wonderful. I've been magnificent. Stupendous. I don't think I've been stupendous yet.
Yes, stupendous. I know you were.
Okay, so the stupendous is out.
Extraordinary?
That's a good fallback word.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Juanita.
Okay, night-night.
Bye now. We're gonna have to get a better list of adjectives, I think. Sorry, that last part about the whole hospital experience with my folks was something less than a laugh a minute. I got reminded in the chat room that my job is to keep people laughing. Somebody just popped in and popped back out and didn't like my pauses. Those are dramatic pauses, doggone it. Those aren't just any pauses. I can go like an auctioneer when I want to. Those were dramatic pauses, you see. They're there for effect. It's an old trick of the trade. I'm reminded, just another little John McCain moment. Doesn't like earmarks, remember? I'm reminded by our good friend Peter Godbold, who's on his way tonight with a great guest, Strictly Confidential, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, that top officials at the Veterans Health Administration have confirmed that the agency's own statistics show that an average of 126 veterans per week, that's 6,552 veterans per year, commit suicide. Suicide. That's 18 veterans per day. And I don't mean like, you know, the Bob Ewell suicide from To Kill a Mockingbird, where Bob Ewell fell on his knife 32 times. I mean real live, honest to God, break your heart, destroys families. They got them home from the war and didn't get all of them home from the war, if you know what I mean. 18 veterans per day. But John McCain doesn't care much for earmarks. John McCain doesn't care much for the 21st century GI Bill. That's what it's called, the GI Bill for the 21st century, or the 21st century GI Bill. It has bipartisan support. It was introduced in the Senate by Virginia Senator Jim Webb. John McCain says he doesn't want to sign on to it because it wouldn't be good for the military, because it would somehow hurt the military's retention. Let all those guys would just be finishing their hitch and running out to run off to college. Lord God Almighty. This guy really thinks this stuff, doesn't he? This isn't one of those moments where he just doesn't give a damn about working people. He actually thinks some of this stuff, if you can call what goes on in the thin, sloppy gray settlings between his ears that pass for brains, if you can call what goes on there thinking. Astonishing. Following up on a little bit of the VA information, check this out. The VA has a backlog of 600,000 benefits claims to sort through. And by virtue of claims by two veterans advocacy groups, Veterans for Common Sense and Veterans United for Truth, they claim that the VA is unprepared to deal with cases of post-traumatic stress disorder among veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, that the VA has turned away veterans who have sought help for depression at VA hospitals, and that some of those later committed suicide. We had the story last week, of course, about the fact that of the veterans who have been in Afghanistan and Iraq, something on the order of 320,000 of them have traumatic brain injuries. Those traumatic brain injuries are actually a little bit tougher to treat, because if you go in and you say, "Sarge, I think I need to go see the doc because I'm not thinking quite right." Well, if you did want to be a lifer and be one of those retention people that McCain's talking about, well, they might put a little check mark inside your personnel file, or so you think, that would end your career. And if you go to the doc, it's not like they look at, "Oh, I'll be damned, you've got a broken arm, let's set it." It's a hell of a lot harder to diagnose a broken brain. And in light of the fact that a couple of years ago, the Bush budget for the Centers for Disease Control Traumatic Brain Injury Research Fund was run to zero, they just zeroed it out, just eliminated it. In the middle of the war, the Bush administration eliminated it with its proposed budget. Going to make that a little bit harder to diagnose and treat too now, isn't it? Just amazing, amazing. the level of wholesale don't give a damnishness that applies to this gang of thugs. And like I said, coming up, a little bit of the nasty racist side of John McCain's straight talk. On the way, right here on listener-supported Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without price. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes. I have wandered through this world, and as each moment has unfurled, I've been waiting to awaken from these dreams. People go just where they will. I never noticed them until I got this feeling that it's later than it seems. Doctor, my
Head-on begins now. 1-877-443-2367. Here's Buck. Okie dokie. Hour number three underway. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366 if you are wanting us to do the toll-free thing, which we'll be happy to do. If, however, the phone company doesn't stick it to you for making a long-distance call, 304-658-3333. Easy enough, right? Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. I don't say that enough, I'm told. So I'm trying to sort of make amends. All right, now, let's see. The earmarks and McCain. McCain and earmarks. Just not necessarily for everybody, but just sort of to remind people who think that shots of whiskey and scratching one's nose actually matters in the grand scheme of things. I think I'm more pissed off at those people than I am anybody else, even the Repiglicans sometimes. But to go back to where we were, just to review, yesterday, Insane McCain, Mad Dog McCain, John McBush, John McSame, the McCain-Churian McCain did it, shows up on This Week with George Snuffleupagus. And he starts telling us about what a tough guy he's going to be when it comes to those nasty old earmarks.
Here's $100 billion right here for you, George. 2 years in a row, last 2 years, the President of the United States has signed into law two big spending, pork barrel-laden bills worth $35 billion. That increases the budget.
John, just between us, who put the pork in there? That would be your party. Your party is massively more responsible for more reckless spending than Democrats have ever dreamed of being. You know, we do stupid stuff like building roads and bridges and transportation systems and hospitals and... You guys, bridge to nowhere. But never mind.
The baseline of the budget. In the years before that, $65 billion. You do away with those. There's $100 billion right there before you look at any agency of government.
Okay, so he's a tough guy. He's going to get after the earmarks. So, today, John McCain went to Gee's Bend, Alabama. Gee's Bend is across the river, the Alabama River, from from the town on the other side, Camden, Alabama. And in order to get from Gee's Bend to Camden, you have to ride a ferry, or else it's an 80-mile round-trip drive. Well, he went to Alabama today. On what he's calling the It's Time for Action tour. And he says he's going to spotlight forgotten Americans.
We will travel to areas of this country that in many ways have been forgotten and left behind.
And that's how he wound up in what he called the remote town of Gee's Bend, across the river from Camden. It's only remote because of the absence of roads and bridges. You know, stuff that Democrats spend money on. But in John McCain's world, it's an earmark. There's only one problem. The ferry between Gee's Bend, Alabama and Camden, Alabama was built with an earmark! It was only able to be reopened in 2006 because of an earmark in the form of a federal grant that allowed the ferry to reopen in 2006. And here's the fun part. Because 44 years ago, county leaders closed the ferry to keep African-American residents of Gee's Bend from crossing the river to the county seat to demand full civil rights. So let's review. John McCain hates earmarks. John McCain would therefore have done away with this earmark that reopened the ferry between Gee's Bend, Alabama and Camden. Might be Gee's Bend. I think it's Gee, though. And that ferry was closed so as to keep African Americans from trying to become full-fledged citizens of the United States. You heard him there. He's going to get do away with the pork barrel-laden bills. So there's a question for John McCain. Are you against earmarks even when they facilitate travel that arguably saves gasoline and makes it possible for people who live in minority communities to go to the seat of government? Are you against those too, Joan? Really? You are? Oh, that's pork, isn't it, John? Making it possible for people to go and register to vote. That's pork. making it possible for people to turn an 80-mile round trip into a 10-mile round trip. That's pork, isn't it, John? See, that's the thing. That's the kind of stuff you get into when you start making blanket statements like, I'm going to get rid of all the earmarks. This is just... Senator McCain, maybe this isn't the best place in the world for you to go hating on earmarks. Senator McCain, this isn't going to play very well. Well, never mind, Senator McCain. Those people weren't going to vote for you in the first place, now, were they? Lord God. I didn't know that there were still... Maine or the Great Northwest, things like that. I assumed that there's still some ferries and so forth, Staten Island Ferry in New York, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't know there were still, in the flyover country, the heart of America, places where, wow, do I just sound sort of elitist, I guess. Oh, there he goes, being elitist. Next thing you know, he'll scratch his nose. I didn't know that there were places like Geese Bend that were so, as isolated as that, but I'm sure there are. Obviously now. Not just John McCain. Simply astonishing. And then, trying to decide here whether we take a powder on John McCain for a little bit. Let's stay after John for a little bit. Seeing as how last week during the pageant in Pennsylvania, Barack Obama was asked the loaded question that had been spoon-fed to him by Sean Hannity, spoon-fed to Judas Snuffleupagus, that is. Seeing as how he had to be asked questions about his relationship with a former member of the Weather Underground. Reckon it might be fair to ask John McCain about a few of the weirdos that he runs around with? He has yet to explain his tight little association with people like convicted felon and former Watergate burglar G. Gordon Liddy. Yeah, Liddy's still a convicted felon. Liddy is still a piece of trash. Liddy got on the publicly owned airwaves in the 90s and gave hints on how best to kill a federal agent. Liddy refers to McCain as a good personal friend. Niner. He says Niner on his show, if you've ever heard. It's just silly. McCain's been on Liddy's show. McCain's website provides call-in info for Liddy's show. And Liddy is still an unrepentant Watergate burglar. But unlike the situation where Barack Obama had to be asked about his knowledge of or acquaintanceship with a former member of the Weather Underground. Well, nobody's asking John McCain about his bosom buddy, G. Gordon Liddy. Now, to be fair, after last week, I asked some questions, and apparently others are asking them as well, about the fact that since, again, Barack Obama was called on to answer for, explain for, take the heat for everything that the Reverend Jeremiah Wright has ever said, why wasn't anybody leaning on John McCain about that nasty old televangelical freak, John Hagee? Lo and behold, I don't know, you know, maybe a little bit of this did rub off on George Snuffleupagus. Because he finally got around to asking McCain about it. Oh, this whole segment with George Snuffleupagus was just a piece of work.
But his relationship with Mr. Ayers is open to question.
Why?
And that because if you're going to associate and have as a friend and serve on a board and have a guy kick off your campaign that says he's unrepentant, that he wished he'd bombed more, and then the worst thing of all that I think really indicates...
But see, John McCain wishes he'd never been shot out of the sky by that surface-to-air missile over North Vietnam, doesn't he? That means John McCain wishes he'd bombed more peasant huts, doesn't it? John McCain remains to this day unrepentant for what he did to North Vietnamese peasants. The mothers, the fathers, the grandmothers, the grandfathers, aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters, little babies, babies in the womb that he slaughtered with, you know, fun stuff like napalm. Now here he is, leaning on Barack Obama over Mr. Ayers, who was a member of the Weather Underground. Big deal. But he wants to talk about being unrepentant?
But his relationship with Mr. Ayers is open to question.
Why?
And that because if you're going to associate and have as a friend and serve on a board and have a guy kick off your campaign that says he's unrepentant, that he wished he'd bombed more, and then the worst thing of all that I think really indicates Senator Obama's attitude is he had the incredible statement that he compared Mr. Ayers, an unrepentant terrorist, with Senator Tom Coburn. Senator Coburn, a physician.
Senator Tom Coburn is insane. Senator Tom Coburn, you may recall, is the senator from Oklahoma who, when running for his Senate seat, declared that the junior high schools of Oklahoma are suffering an epidemic of lesbianism. Really, not kidding.
...who goes to Oklahoma on the weekends and brings babies into life, comparing those two, I mean, that...
Oh, wait a minute, John, I think you just screwed up. You said that Tom Coburn goes to Oklahoma on the weekends and brings babies into life. We all know that life begins whenever a Republican opens a bank book for a little fertilized egg, right? Oh, the right-to-lifers aren't going to be happy with you.
That's an attitude, frankly, that certainly isn't in keeping with the overall attitude
Senator
of the American
Obama
people.
Said...
And it's very insulting to a great man, a great doctor, a great humanitarian.
Oh, stop it. There is nothing great about Tom Coburn. The man is, by any measure, nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. This is one of those family values people. This is who do you think Sally Kern, that hateful thing in Oklahoma who said that gay people are worse than terrorists, who do you think she got her cues from? Who do you think runs the Republican Party in Oklahoma? Why, people like Senator Jim Inhofe and Senator Tom Coburn, that's who.
To compare him with a guy who says, after 2001, I wish we had bombed more. I had a reconciliation with the anti-war movement. One of the great experiences of my life was to get to know and love David Ifshin. I had a reconciliation with the Vietnamese when we normalized relations. But how can you countenance someone who was engaged in bombings which could have or did kill innocent people?
Senator Obama says he was 8 years old when that was happening.
But he became friends with him and spent time with him while the guy...
That's a hell of a standard. Now you're holding Senator Obama responsible for things that were done when he was 8, but that's not surprising after all. We had the whole flap a few months ago where he was called on the carpet for saying that he wanted to be president when he was in kindergarten. This presidential campaign is going to... What going to? This presidential campaign makes me feel like we've already gone down the rabbit hole. John McCain had a reconciliation with the anti-war movement. John McCain had a reconciliation with the Vietnamese. Reckon how he reconciled with the people that he slew. How did John McCain have a reconciliation with the North Vietnamese that he slaughtered deliberately and intentionally from 40,000 feet in the air? How'd that reconciliation go for you there, John, huh?
He was unrepentant over his activities as a member of a terrorist organization, the Weatherman. And then to compare him with Dr. Tom Coburn, who spends so much of his life bringing babies into this world.
He just said Tom Coburn goes home on the weekends and brings babies into life. Now, it's either so much of his life or it's weekends, John. You can't have it both ways.
That, in my view, is really, is borders on outrage.
He also pointed out that he and Mr. Ayers have a very loose relationship. They live in the same neighborhood. There was an organizing meeting many, many years ago, he says, in his house, and he says, frankly, I don't agree with these comments that Mr. Ayers made.
He doesn't agree with them. Does he condemn them? Would he condemn someone who says that they're unrepentant and wish that they had bombed more?
Does that mean it's okay for us to condemn you, John McCain? Because you stand in need of profound condemnation. No one made you. No one made you bomb those villages in Vietnam. There might even have been some itsy bitsy teensy weensy tiny little molecular level microscopic bit of something in what passes for your conscience that knew it was wrong and you did it anyway, John. You stand condemned.
You compare him to a doctor, one of the great humanitarian, and in my view, one of the greatest spokesperson for the rights of the unborn.
Well,
in America.
Tom Coburn is one of the greatest spokespersons for the rights of the unborn. Horse crap. Tom Coburn is a repig licking. Tom Coburn hates welfare. Tom Coburn hates any form of prenatal care that the government has a hand in. Tom Coburn, as a repiglican, despises food stamps. He loathes WIC, the program for food for women and infant children. He's one of the greatest spokesmen for the rights of the unborn. How is he on the born, John? How is he on the already on the ground? How is he on the non-fetus infant category? Not so good, huh, John?
You say he should condemn these comments.
Sure.
A lot of Senator Obama's allies and others say that you should condemn the comments of Reverend John Hagee, an evangelical pastor.
Oh, I do. And I did. I said that any comments that he made about the Catholic Church, I strongly condemn.
Yet you solicited and accepted his endorsement.
Yes, indeed I did. And I condemned the comments that he made concerning the Catholic Church.
But you're going to hold on to his endorsement. Your own campaign acknowledged that you should have done a better job of vetting Pastor Hagee.
Oh, sure.
So was it a mistake to solicit and accept his endorsement?
Oh, probably. Sure. But I admire and respect Dr. Hagee's leadership
I admire and respect the leadership of... Jesus, you know where that's going. You condemn him for the leadership that he's shown in condemning Catholics. But you admire the rest of his leadership.
You know that... I'm sorry, that's... Go figure. A little nutty in my book.
His church, I admire and appreciate his advocacy for the state of Israel, the independence and freedom of the state of Israel. I condemn remarks that are made that has anything to do, which is condemning of the Catholic Church. But so
you don't want to
want
his endorsement.
Many things. I'm glad to have his endorsement. I condemn.
Now wait a minute. Flip flop, flip flop, flip flop, flip flop. a minute ago, he was saying it was probably a mistake and they didn't vet him well enough and really probably shouldn't have gone after his endorsement, but now he's glad to have it? Whew. Talk about having your cake and eating it, too.
Remarks that are anyway viewed as anti anything.
Let's talk.
Thanks for asking.
Let's talk about it.
And thanks for asking. Oh, by God, if I had a gun in my pocket, George Snuffleupagus, I'd blow your flipping brains out right now. How dare you ask me questions like that? What the hell's going on here? I'm used to coming on this show and getting handed snowballs. I'm used to just batting the softballs right out of the park. What are you doing asking me serious stuff? What's going on here, George? We're going to have a talk. Do I have to call the mouse up there in the chairman's office at Disney and get to straighten your ass up? What do you think you're doing? I'm John McCain. I'm a war hero. I was in the Hanoi Hilton. Kiss my butt. Thanks for asking. That nervous little laugh. Email, I remind you that when the Weather Underground was at large, McCain was in the Hanoi Hilton. He knows nothing about the organization except what his wingnut buddies have told him. I remember those days. And nobody would ever rat out the Weather Underground in those days because everyone who was not a right-winger was on their side. It was kind of like the spirit of Paul Revere. Those days were as bad as these days. Were they? Really? I mean, I was a kid, so I can't speak to that. I can't imagine anything short of maybe the actual Great Depression being worse than what we have now. Maybe the actual shooting part of the Civil War. But I can't imagine much else. Now, let's see here. Let's get a little bit away from John McCain for a minute, although in a way it's not that far. The big New York Times report that rolled out in its Sunday edition yesterday that stated sort of the obvious, if you will. The obvious being that the United States military had groomed, that's the word that's used in the headline here, groomed television analysts. What it boils down to, according to the Reuters report, many U.S. military analysts used as commentators regarding Iraq by television networks have been groomed by the Pentagon. Leaving, the report says, some feel, I don't know who some are, except to say that I guess I'm a little bit of some, feeling that they were manipulated to report favorably on the Bush administration. And I say I'm a little bit of some because it's, duh, it's the Pentagon. Forget about it, Jake, it's Chinatown. This is what they do. But I guess it comes as a great surprise to find out that all of these former generals and admirals and field marshals and whatnot that were on the air 24/7 as shock and awe was raining down on the neighborhoods of Baghdad and mud huts where mothers and children were trying simply to live their lives. I suppose it comes as a shock that these well-coiffed, groomed former kill jock leaders were actually dummies, plants for the Pentagon. According to the New York Times, records and interviews show how the Bush administration has used its control over access and information in an effort to transform the analysts into a kind of media Trojan horse. Oh, they're Trojans, all right. An instrument intended to shape terrorism coverage from the inside of the major TV and radio networks. Terrorism coverage? Now it's terrorism coverage? Isn't this just sort of an extension of what we're... It's not even the war anymore? It's all terrorism all the time? Holy mackerel. The Pentagon says that the analysts were only given accurate information. Really? How many analysts were on the air talking about the heroic last stand of... Why can't I remember her name anymore from Palestine, West Virginia, who isn't Lindy England? Must be on a brain cell that I subsequently killed. And that was accurate information when we heard the stories of how her vehicle had rolled over and she was beset by ferocious Iraqi fighters. And that she emptied her weapon. She shot till she couldn't shoot anymore. And then the Iraqis descended upon her and violated her young, nubile American body. Come on. How many analysts? CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, Headline News, CBS, NBC, ABC, God knows, Fox... And every one of them had an expert military analyst who the Pentagon says was given only accurate information, sitting there lying their asses off. They were only given accurate information. And you and me, we're supposed to swallow that? Kind of a challenge, isn't it? By the way, a couple of right-wingers, one of them being John Podoritz, made some remarks about the New York Times story. He said, Barstow's endless tale reveals nothing more than that the Pentagon treated former military personnel like VIPs, courted them, and served them extremely well in hopes of getting the kind of coverage that would counteract the nastier stuff written about the Defense Department in the media.
Really?
Mr. Podhoritz, would you care to point me toward the nasty stuff that was written about the Defense Department in the media? Because I was reading a whole lot of media back then when the war was starting against the poor, benighted people of Iraq. And I can't remember any nasty stuff being written about the Defense Department because it was all cheerleading, rah, 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 all the time with a quote in every story from another one of those dummied up, ginned up, frauded up, rubed up, faked up military analysts to whom the Pentagon had given nothing but accurate information. Max Boot. Yeah, that's a real name, who is apparently some sort of neocon freak, asks, why did the Times decide this story is so important? After all, it's no secret that the Pentagon and every other branch of government routinely provides background briefings to journalists and tries to influence their coverage by carefully doling out access. All this is part and parcel of the daily grind of Washington journalism, in which the Times is, of course, a leading participant.
Huh?
That makes no sense. Is he saying now that these military analysts who were brought on to television programs and cited in newspaper reports and had on right-wing talk shows to blather away about what a wonderful, wonderful thing the attack on Iraq was, is he saying that they somehow now qualify as journalists? Interesting, those two quotes. Podhoritz and Boot. There's sort of a thread there, a common thread. The Pentagon treated former military personnel like VIPs, and all this is part and parcel of the daily grind of Washington journalism. Just another day. Keep moving. Don't look over here. These are not the droids you're looking for. In other words, a common thread that was most likely developed by the Pentagon itself to deal with this story, knowing that it was coming out, and another layer of mendacity by the Department of Defense. It never stops. But here's what it's all about. This is the quote from the New York Times that sort of leaps out. Internal Pentagon documents repeatedly refer to the military analysts as message force multipliers. Those people can do some of the most obscene things to an otherwise lovely language like English. Message force multipliers, or surrogates, who could be counted on to deliver administration themes and messages to millions of Americans in the form of their own opinions. There's the kicker, in the form of their own opinions. That's where the fraud lies, you see. It's fraud to bring somebody on or quote somebody who is supposedly is independent, who is actually carrying water officially for an undisclosed body, person, agency. Another quote, the access came with a condition. Participants were instructed not to quote their briefers directly or otherwise describe their contacts with the Pentagon. Name change. It's no longer the Pentagon, it's the Pentacon. Because that's what this was. This was a con. This was a tease. It was a blood tease. One participant of a hosted trip to Iraq in September 2003, General Nash of ABC, said some briefings were so clearly artificial that he joked to another group member that they were on the George Romney Memorial trip to Iraq, a reference to Mr. Romney's infamous claim that American officials had brainwashed him into supporting the Vietnam War during a tour there in 1965. Even they knew they were in... They knew they were in on the scam. And even to the people, the analysts, the so-called experts, who were in on the scam, realized that it was a nasty, cheesy little fraud. Mr. Robert Bevilacqua, a Fox analyst, was among those invited to a briefing in early 2003 about Iraq's purported stockpiles of illicit weapons. Mr. Robert McGinnis said he concluded that the analysts were being manipulated to convey a false sense of certainty about the evidence of the weapons. Yet he and Mr. Bevilacqua and the other analysts who attended the briefings did not share any misgivings with the American public. This is the death of the Fourth Estate, in case you were wondering. What a fraud. And you wonder how, what was it at one point, 90% of America said, woo, keen, let's have some war. We dare wonder how that happened? With the exception of those of us who are dedicated to finding the facts, it's almost a natural state of affairs. When you feed people nothing but BS, can you reasonably expect that their breath is going to smell like rose water? This is that. Lordy. To the phones.
Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Yeah, a few nights ago you said how this movie's going to play out.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
If McCain wins, I could tell you right now how this movie is going to play out. Look at German history from the late 1800s to about the early 1950s.
Okay.
Okay. At the height of the First World War, the Kaiser started becoming devastated about the amount of wounded and killed coming in, reports. And he asked his generals, is there anything we can do to come to our armistice with the Allied nations? And the general said, Your Highness, we couldn't stop this war if we wanted to. So much money has been invested in the German military industrial complex, and so much of the economy was tied in, that they would have been economically ruined. And they were afraid to, even though it ended up happening anyway. What got Germany out was them doing what they did best under the Hitler regime, was going back to rearming themselves and making armaments.
Last week, when he had Colonel Wilkerson on, Mark Levine asked a similar question of Colonel Wilkerson. He said, you know, do you see an end to this? Is there an end in sight, talking about Iraq? And Colonel Wilkerson said, no, I don't.
Well, he's absolutely right. And, you know, and that was the economic plan for Hitler, too, constant warfare.
And that's the only thing that props up the economy, right?
No, it's not. But it's the easy way out.
It's easier
but wait,
Kevin, it can't go on indefinitely. We can't keep writing hot checks. I mean, it's mathematical. Our ability to print more money and have any kind of stability to our monetary system has a finite sort of, I mean, it's finite, right? I mean, it doesn't go on forever. We can't just keep the presses rolling.
Well, that'll be something for some administration way down the road to worry about.
See, I disagree with you. I don't think we can keep this up for another 4 years. I don't think we can keep it up for 8.
I don't think we can keep it up for another year, but hey, they don't care.
I got an email here that says Nancy Pelosi is already, it says that she's getting ready to cave on another $178 billion for Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
How long?
Hey, I don't know. All I can say is...
Yeah, here it is. It's from Democrats.com. Headline, Pelosi plans $178 billion blank check for Iraq.
And that's the thing. Our economy is so tied up in the military-industrial complex. I think for us to go a different route or alternate route, they're too scared to.
This just amazes me. If this is correct, Kevin, it says, despite the overwhelming opposition of the American people, Speaker Pelosi plans to rush a vote through Congress for another $178 billion blank check. Where? I know it probably makes me sound sort of naive. Where's that money coming from?
We're borrowing it. Just like Hitler borrowed the money from the Bush family and Ford Motor Company.
So somewhere in the banking halls of the People's Republic of China, there is someone who is to the Bush family what the Bush family was to Hitler.
Yes. There has to be.
Holy cow.
That's the only way I see it going.
It makes me speechless, Kevin. It does. Now, I'm being told that that's not entirely true, that Pelosi intends to attach unemployment benefit extensions to the bill, so dear leader says, well, you know, I'll veto that. So this could be some brinksmanship and gamesmanship and trying to find an end game in an election year. Georgia's demanding a war funding bill that doesn't have anything else in it. And the thing that scares me to death is that based on if Shakespeare said is true and what's passed as prologue, Kevin, after he vetoes this bill, he'll get the clean bill that he wanted in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's not me being negative. That's me looking back at past practice. And, I mean, isn't that what this Democratic Congress has done every other time?
Oh, yeah.
Talk tough, get vetoed, roll over and wait for the belly scratch.
Well, it kind of reminds me of Animal House when Dean Wormigal double secret probation kind of thing.
Yeah. Double secret probation. Oh, my God. The federal government reduced to Animal House. I'm not criticizing you, but I think there's truth in it. Amazing. But I, honest to God, don't know how we keep this going. Maybe somebody knows the magic that I don't know, but the banking houses are going south. The New York Stock Exchange may correct itself all the way down to something around 10,000.
Oh, I couldn't go lower than that.
Or lower. And that unemployment rates rise, inflation, gas prices. It's really... what's the average right now? I saw the average gas price now is, what, $3.47? That's the national average. That means it's much higher in other places.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I don't know. What happens to middle-class America when gas hits $5, $6 a gallon?
Same thing that happened in middle-class Germany when the Deutschmark was basically worthless.
And that is?
$1 million for a loaf of bread. Even the, you know, I prayed as an. I had a neighbor who grew up during the Great Depression, and they used to play with the German money as kids because it was so worthless. Millions of dollars worth of German money.
Should have hung on to it. The money got better.
Well, yeah. Hopefully 50 years down the road or another 30 years after our economy's so wrecked, you know, some foreign country will come and occupy us and bail us out and rebuild our industries and all that, like we did for the Germans.
We're a debtor nation to Mexico. Imagine that. If you ran political ads, John McCain wants to continue more of the Bush administration. Under the Bush administration, the United States has become a debtor nation to Mexico.
Well,
want some more?
What? You know what, Bob? Anything the Mexicans get out of us, they deserve.
Well, no. That's not what... Yeah, I'm not complaining about that. But...
You know, we did kind of screw them over, you know, in the 19th century.
Oh, I know. The Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo?
Yeah.
Sure. The Gadsden Purchase...
Yeah.
It's not much of a purchase when you got a gun to your head, but never mind.
Oh yeah, we did kind of screw them over.
That kind of that kind of makes a mugging. Oh no, I purchased her purse from her.
Yeah.
Right.
I purchased your purse for a penny.
Yeah. This I got a. I'm going to trade you this 10 cent piece of ammunition, which I will now remove from my gun and hand to you, and you're going to give me your wallet instead. Otherwise. You don't get the whole 10 cent piece of ammunition. You only get the 4 cent bullet in the back of your head.
Oh yeah.
Funny how we have a habit of doing business that way.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it happened in Japan.
Yeah, it did. We've done it to a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
The question is, do the chickens come home to roost?
Well, it's happening now.
And that's not something I look forward to, or that I relish, or that I want to happen. But I just don't see it not happening, Kevin, if there is a McCain presidency. If there is not a McCain presidency, if it's a Clinton or an Obama presidency, they're going to have to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 4 solid years to keep it from happening anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Fortunately, being Democrats, they might actually do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, the thing is that this has been planned out years before. And, you know, basically the right wing and those who can afford to, you know, particularly Bush family, has basically set themselves up financially and politically where they can just simply move off elsewhere.
Sure. Because when real estate values go down here, they'll go up somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, and that's just the way it is. You know, why do you think they bought all that land in Paraguay?
right up by the Bolivian border.
Oh, yeah.
I hear it's lovely there this time of year.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, I got to roll along. We're running out of time.
Oh, okay, though.
All right, later.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. It's like that great line from The In-Laws where Peter Falk says, I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,400. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, I've kept that one brain cell dry. The name you were looking for was Jessica Lynch.
Thank you. Thank you. I forget her every time.
Well, you know, it's able to be, but it was that long ago. I mean, and we now can say long ago, you know, in this living hell we live in. You know, like I say, here's a girl that essentially was almost being held prisoner by her own people once she got back because they were afraid she was going to tell the truth.
Yeah. And it's not just Jessica Lynch. You wonder about these military analysts when they were opining on the death of Pat Tillman.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, you're talking about that. They were talking yesterday on Howie's show. He had John Aravosa, who's one of the bloggers on
America Blog. Yeah,
America Blog. He said, you know, I've never been asked. You know, who funds me? Who do I work for? He said, you know, and he went down the whole list of all the different things. He says, you know, no one's ever asked me. And he said, you know, isn't it amazing, though, and I'm sure it was the same way with them, he said, no one ever, why is it that TV news will happily put anybody on they claim as an expert but not tell you who they are? You know, I mean, who do you have deals with? You know, if you're working for such and such, fine, put it, you know, so they can run it underneath your name.
Sort of reminds me of the story that came out a month or so ago about the lung cancer study from Cornell University that turns out to have been funded by a foundation that was set up by Big Tobacco.
Oh, yeah.
This was the lung cancer study that showed that lung cancer was more and more curable.
Well, what did it used to be? It used to be a thing called the Tobacco Institute.
Yes, indeedy.
They used to put out those things. Oh, by the way, who's paying for it? The tobacco companies.
That's why I'm a little bit less than taken or taken in, if you will, by the automobile safety numbers that come for the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety.
Because no one ever tells you who they are. Well, you know, it's one day I got looking, just going through something, and I saw something, I think it was on Media Matters. And, you know, every time you see over on the Bruce Blitzer show, you see Mr. Snyder come out. And how many people know Mr. Snyder works for a right-wing think tank? In his daytime job.
Do you think that they'll recognize him when Tony Snow shows up as an employee of CNN?
But you know what I mean? It is one of
No, you know that's true, right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I have no doubt of it.
Tony Snow has joined CNN.
Oh, gosh. Well, what do we expect? I mean, you're sitting there with Beck on headline news. And amazingly enough, no one at CNN seems to pretend that they don't know who he is.
And his ratings stink, and he's still there.
Well, you were talking about Alan Keyes a while ago. Because remember, like, I saw somebody today said Alan Keyes is going to get beaten by a cockroach in a fight. But, you know, you were talking about G. Gordon. Remember, G. Gordon one time said that if Richard Nixon had told him to meet somebody on the corner of such and such and such and such in Washington in D.C. and kill him, he said he would have done it. He said, why? I said, because he's the president.
Well, he was a strict adherent of if the president does it, it's not illegal.
Hmm. If the president tells me to murder, then murder is no longer illegal because I'm doing it for my country.
But nobody's wearing John McCain out about him. Oh, yeah, they can have a big freak out about Ayers and Obama, who, you know, spoke to each other 8 years ago. But now let's not ask John McCain about that touchy-feely relationship he has with G. Gordon Liddy.
But, you know, it is one of those things where, like you said, you were talking about it, said, you know, it's like, the news, what we laughingly call the news, gets to that point now. It's like, say, every time somebody's coming on, you're wanting to ask them, you know, who are you and who do you work for and whose car are you carrying in your pocket right now, you know? You know, when you see all these different people, they were talking the thing you were talking about, they were talking about Tori Clark.
Yes.
She essentially was sort of managing where all these people go, who gets sent to who. So it's sort of like, well, she no longer works for the government, we think.
Why isn't this just a part of journalistic ethics, Luke?
Well, I agree. I mean, you know, if I say before you let somebody on your show, per se, you know what I mean, as an expert, you better know who that person is. I mean, you know, it's like say, you know, you're going to put somebody on one day, and you know, by the time they're done, the time you get them off the air, they're going, kill them all.
That's my point, though. If I've got somebody here on the show,
you've done a little research and know who they are, basically.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Waldman's going to be on the show maybe in the next week or so to talk about The Real McCain, the McCain book that he did with David Brock. And I'll go through the bio again and explain, you know, this is Paul Waldman. Paul Waldman does this. And I don't think he'd want me to do any other.
No. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. If you ain't, as one of the old saying, if you ain't got nothing to hide, you ain't afraid to tell people what you do. You know, some of these people nowadays, it's like say, you got to wonder. You know, it's like say they're wanting to go, no, don't use my picture. Somebody might recognize me. Like, what are you, the witness protection program? What?
I can't come up with another answer, Luke, except to say that the media are deliberately, ethically bankrupt.
Well, you know, it was the thing. I always go back to my favorite one. Still has to be Colin Powell in the cartoons. You know, here we are showing the mobile labs. We don't have any pictures of them, so here we're going to show you cartoons.
Right. Or, you know, you mentioned Howie a minute ago. Howie Kurtz never brings out seldom. I mean, you've got to like go after him with the flat end of a shovel to get him to admit who his wife works for.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same thing, you know, like with Matthews. You know, he don't tell who his wife works for either, most of the time, unless you just about beat him with a stick. You know, but like you say, it's one of those things. It's like if you don't ask the questions, you ain't going to find out nothing. And most of these people act like, how dare you ask me a question?
And I got to admit, I wasn't real good back then of asking why is this general on CNN or why is that general on NBC. I just figured that there's a speaker bureau of retired generals, that it's part of the gig. It's part of the double dip. Once you've gotten out of the military, you go out and you collect a check for being an opinion.
Or something. Yeah.
But then it turns out that like I said, you know, my first inclination was to go, well, duh. But, you know, I wasn't, no. When all this was going down, I just sort of took it at face value that, you know, but then again, I look at things as, you know, retired generals say pro-military things. But then when you get the Shinsekis and the Shalakashvilis out there saying, no, wait, stop, you know, we tried to smarten up the chumps on this one, then you begin to realize that some of this is dummied up.
You know, it's like the whole thing, you know, with Shinseki. You know, here he is, and he's saying, you know, you got to have 300,000 to 400,000 people at a bare minimum. And they're essentially saying, go sit in the corner, please. Who cares if you're the head of it? You'll be out of here in 2 months. Go sit in the corner.
What? 500,000 trips? Hey, you know what? You're late for your retirement party. I know. Hey, Luke, I got to roll on, brother.
All right, bud. Take it easy.
Bye now.
Hi.
Our buddy Luke calling in from Knoxville, Tennessee. That's the show for tonight. And by the way, thank you to all of you who contribute to keep the horn on the air. I'm proud to say that we have reached the $1,400 mark for the month of April. We are still a long way from out of the hole. We're a long way from the $2,000 it takes to keep us going every month. $600 or so. So if you haven't participated this month, it would certainly, if you can, and if you are willing, be wonderful if you did. PayPal buttons on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com page. Or you can always use snail mail to HeadOn 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Sure would be nice to not have to say this anymore for the rest of the month. You know what I mean? I know you know what I mean. On his way, Peter Godbold with another edition of Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Many thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who almost single-handedly saved liberal talk on the internet with the archives at whiterosesociety.org. He's raising funds too and needs your help if you can. whiterosesociety.org. Also, of course, each show on the horn is brought to you in part by the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You can be a part of Coal River Mountain Watch. Go to the website and learn how. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
We'll be right back.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 133 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch.